Just change the battery. That's all you have to do, see? Instead of getting frustrated, just change the battery. It's very simple. Okay. So we have to develop our attitudes and reactions that enable us to accept, to tolerate, to ignore many of the things that annoy and irritate people. So many small things that are, you know, today in America, we have very low levels of tolerance. Every small thing, because everything's meant to be perfect. Right? The food is meant to be good. So now the food is missing some salt. Missing salt! It's bad! What's going on? Put some salt. Just take some salt. People go crazy because small things. Why? That chair is in the wrong place. Can you move it back, please? And that little piece of paper. Oh, that paper. Oh, it's terrible. The paper on the floor. Calm down. It's just a piece of paper. You know, if you raise children, you have to know that the house is children. Everything's around. You've got to have very high levels of tolerance because children are all around.
Grandchildren.
So, grandchildren, yeah. So, some people need everything to be just so. It's got to be exactly the right temperature. It's got to be the right thing. You know, have people come into the shul, they always try and fiddle with the thermostat because they're used to a certain temperature. So at home, it's so-and-so temperature. They come inside, they want the shul to be the same temperature as home. So sometimes you put the temperature of the thermostat in a box. Everyone comes along, so this guy comes along. In the winter, he wants it 75. In the summer, he wants it 69. So what's going on here? In the winter, you want 75. In the winter, summer, 69. So you're every time you come in, you push the thing. What are you going to do? So everyone's different. They want to just show. So that's why? Because people have low tolerance levels. Everything has to be perfect. So that person's going to be much more unhappy when things are not perfect. It's very hard when you're going in a plane because they have no control on the thermostat. Sometimes it's too cold, it's too hot. It's that. So you take a blanket, they give you a blanket. Okay, and if it's too hot, what you do? Take off a few layers if you can. Whatever. So there's nothing you can do. So a person's going to think, there's nothing I can do. This is the weather. I'm going to get frustrated. Come to my house, I'm my own boss, I can put the thermostat wherever I want. I'm going to the shul, I'm not the boss anymore. Hashem is the boss in the shul. I can do whatever I want. So it's very hard. People get upset, and they get annoyed, and they get da-da-da-da, and they get frustrated. And what happens is, they lose their cool, and they're not happy. So what a person has to do is try and adjust their levels of what's okay and what's not okay. It's also okay. Okay, I'll add it to my list of okays. It's okay, it's okay. Don't get frustrated, don't get upset. It's... Yes?
I was going to say, it's better if you don't grow up spoiled.
100%. And that's why it's very important. The first thing you have to teach a child is no. Actually, it's not the first. It's actually the second or third. The first thing you have to teach a child is Torah, Tzivalah, Moshe, Morashah, Kilat Yaakov. The Torah is from Hashem, Shema Yisrael. And then you teach them no. Tell them no. Teach them no at a very early age, that they don't get a shock later on. The earlier they know the word no and they can't have everything they want, the better for the child. Because once a child feels they can have whatever they want, the first time they get no, it's like a big slap in the face, and then they can't adjust to it. It takes a while, especially when a child's older, 16, 15. Imagine, till then, teenagers, the parents don't tell them no. And then when they get the no, they just, what? Chutzpah! Tell them no, I never heard of such a thing. No, it's impossible. My parents always say yes. Well, how come they said no now? It's a big slap in the face. So it's very important to get a child used to saying no. And plus, don't spoil the child. Don't spoil the child. Why? Because it's very, very hard to change habits afterwards. So, for example, I know...
The Yiddish expression, can sein Ärger. No. I don't know if you understand
Yiddish. No, didn't. No.
Can sein Ärger means...
Could be worse. Yiddish?
A bissel. Okay. No, let's not overdo it now, okay?
It's not so bad. Can sein Ärger.
Okay.
Could be worse.
Okay. All right.
And that helps you deal with things.
Okay, thank you. I won't get upset. It's okay. All right. So let's move on a little bit. So basically, it's very important. Teach a child no and not spoil the child. For example, you tell a child, Sunday mornings, the child has a very hard time getting up in the morning. So the parents say, okay, never. He works all week. He logs hard in school. He doesn't have any time off. Let him sleep late there Sunday morning. So 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, the child wakes up Sunday mornings. You know how hard it's going to be for that child later on to change? So used to Sunday mornings, getting up 11 o'clock. It's so hard to get up for a minyan. You want to get up for minyan? Got to work on it. It's so hard to get up because every Sunday morning the guy was sleeping till 11 o'clock to the age of 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23.
The kids go to school now.
Yeah,
on Sundays.
I know what I'm saying. So even better. Same, what about the girls? The girls don't go. So, yeah.
Somebody was once going to give me a ride and I said, if the car is going to be too crowded, I don't want to go with you. He said, no, I want my children to learn that they don't have to be so comfortable in the car.
Okay.
Like they'll move over and they'll make room.
Okay, it's good for the kids, but what about for you?
Like
okay, it may be good for the kids, but not good for you. Okay, it's okay. But it's an idea. It's a very important idea. Teach children and to volunteer and to give of their time to other people as well. It's very, very important. And the kids grow up and they grow up volunteering. Because the parents told them to volunteer. They taught them how to volunteer at a very early age. Like right? Some parents are very good parents. They teach their children to volunteer and to give and to help and to be helpful in the house. You know, it says Rav, what's his name? Twersky. Doctor, Rabbi Doctor Avraham Twersky, right? He said that when he went to his daughter was getting married, he went to the in-law's house. What is he looking for? He says, I want to see if the father-in-law helps in the house. So that was his thing, because if the father-in-law is helping, then the son will probably follow through. All right, it's not always true. It's not always true, but that's what he's looking for.
But usually it is.
Hopefully.
This is true? That's all that bothered him?
Not the all. Of course it's not the all, but it's the icing on the cake. It's the icing on the cake. I mean, the father...
See how clean the house was. That's
no. Listen, the house could be clean just for a party, but that's it.
Yeah.
And then you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You can't tell. There's the father-in-law helping, you know, schlepping around things, lifting things up, putting things around. Okay. So, everything has to be just so. It's not a good attitude, because then a person is more likely to get upset. So we have to increase and expand our tolerances with people as well. So some people are very, very exact, and very, very, very demanding, and highly critical of other people. And you get annoyed being around them, because they're so critical of others. So either you want to avoid them, or you just want to raise your okay level and say, listen, okay, I can manage this person for half an hour or an hour. I'll try and work on myself. I've got to work on myself. Pardon? If you love a person, you get a rough life. It's not a joke. It's a rough life. It's a test. But that's one of the things you've got to look for before you get married. No, after you're married. Well, after you're married, it's too late. But it happens. Listen.
You never know.
It happens, and you never know, and you have to live with it, adjust, and change yourself. The person's got to say every day, okay, it's not so bad. Look at all the positives. Make a list of all the positives. He says many positives. And there's a few negatives. Everyone has negatives. So better this than something else. Who knows? But it's one of the hardest things to do is live with a person who is, everything has to be exact. Right? Everything has to be in the right place, the right time. Everything there is clean. Okay. So we have to work on it. And then we have to work on ourselves. So it's interesting. Sometimes you have to learn musar just to be around people. On yourself. You have to work on yourself to make yourself adjust. There's a beautiful story. What's his name? Lev Lapian. You heard of Leib Lapian? Harav Leib Lapian. Actually, he was the father of Eliyahu Lapian. Eliyahu Lapian wrote a book, Lev Eliyahu. Beautiful, amazing Musar. Amazing book. I don't know what happened. We had it sometime in our library. I haven't seen it for years. But if you see it, please let me know. Lev Eliyahu, it's called. Amazing book. And then he writes a story. He says, one of his students came to him one day and says, Rabbi, please forgive me. He said, what for? I don't have anything to forgive me. He says, I spoke Lashon Hara about you. He said, yeah. He said, what do you say about me? So he told him what he said. The rabbi was very upset. He said really bad things about him. So he says, come back in 2 weeks. I can't forgive you right now. Come back in 2 weeks. He said, well, why can't you forgive me right now? I'll forgive you. I'll come back in 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, he comes back. He says, now I can forgive you. He said, Rabbi, what took you so long? He says, I had to learn Musar myself to change myself to be able to forgive you. Because I was so upset. I didn't want to say I forgive you because I didn't forgive you. But I had to work on myself to make this okay in my eyes. So I could forgive you. I had to work on myself to forgive you. So it's a very important idea. That's what we're talking about over here. Changing the way one views others to be able to not to get upset. You have to change our views, change ourselves, not to get upset. Why? Because this will normally make me upset. Now how am I going to change? I've got to work on myself. And it happens all the time, raising children. We have our tolerances, and the child breaks the bounds, and then we get really mad at the child. But you know, the child's a child. Depends on the age, obviously. The child's a child. What are you going to do? I'm angry with the child. You can't throw out your child. What are you going to do? The answer is you've got to absorb it. We find this with the story of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, it says, does not rebuke his children at all till the day of his death. Amazing. So he tells Reuven, gives him a very, very harsh rebuke. Reuven, the holder's got the harshest pachas kabayim al totar. He's like, he's flaky like water. Terrible, terrible rebuke. So Rashi says over there, Yaakov Avinu was holding his tongue, biting his tongue for many years. Why? He says, if I rebuke my son Reuven, he's going to go and join Esav. Wow. Think about that. Sometimes we don't think. So, we're ready to rebuke someone, but where are they going to go? They're going to go and join the enemies against us. Who knows what's going to happen? So it's very important to adjust. Imagine, he was biting his tongue for so long until he was 137 years old. He was biting his tongue not to talk, not to say it. But he really had it inside him to rebuke Reuven, but he kept himself quiet. So that's, he was adjusting himself, because he knew it's not going to help. It's going to turn, make things worse. So it's very, very hard to do this. So we have to change ourselves, adjust ours. This is not okay, this is not okay, this is not okay. And you know what, people lose their jobs because they said this is not okay to themselves. Mm-hmm. And then they go and they fight with the boss, or they fight with someone else, and they get thrown out of the job. I know people lost their jobs like that. And it was something small, it wasn't something big, and they could have kept it. It was a very good job, very good pay, very good conditions. And because they got upset, it was ego, basically. Our egos can destroy us. Our egos can destroy us, and that's why humility is really very, very important. And sometimes by those situations, we learn humility. The person lost his job, imagine. Now he's very humble. Why? Because he lost his good job, and now he's got a job which pays half the pay, and the benefits are much lower, and he realized, oh boy, I threw this away. I didn't have to get mad. I didn't have to go fight. I just kept quiet. I kept quiet. I'd been okay. So it's very important to learn this lesson early. How do I become happy? Is I have to raise my tolerance level of things around me. If I raise my tolerance level just a little bit, I can get along with people. If I raise my tolerance level a little bit, I'll be not so frustrated. If I raise my tolerance level a bit, my blood pressure will not go up so high. So it's very, very important to understand this and learn this. And especially when dealing with people, because there are people who are highly critical of other people, they get annoyed at minor trivial matters. Do not be one of them for your own benefit. Develop a sense of perspective. And what's the perspective? It's a very important perspective, because we all have a mission in our lives. Each one of us has their mission. I don't know what your mission is. I don't even know. I'm trying to figure out what my mission is. But we all have to figure out our missions. We all have a mission in life. Hashem created us for a mission. We have to figure out a mission. What is our mission? So basically, let's generalize. Let's go around the table. What is our mission in life? Who wants to start? Mrs. Rosen,
bechavod. To follow what Hashem wants us to do.
Very good. To follow what Hashem wants us to do. So how do you know what Hashem wants you to do? So you learn the Torah, and the Torah tells you what. Right, very good. Okay. Number two, what else? What is our mission in life? So the Vilna Gaon says something very, very important. He says our mission in life is to fix our character traits.
Smart person.
Very hard. Fix our character traits, because the character traits are the mechanism by which our soul comes through to the world. What does that mean? How we interact with other people is through our character traits. So a person's a generous person, they'll be givers. Person's a very selfish, that's our character trait. So the power we're getting from God comes through us through our character traits. So our character traits basically is the mechanism by which we relate to the world. It's the interface. So if we perfect our character traits, the energy will come through and go to the right places. If we don't perfect our character traits, nothing will come through. It's a dead end. The pipes are closed. So that is a very, very important idea. And that's why it's so important to fix that. So we're talking about now happiness, because a person's character traits are flawed. They're not happy. Why? Because they can't tolerate other people. That's a flawed character trait. We have to build ourselves up to the point where I can stand this and I can stand this. And this way a person gets stronger, not weaker. If you can stand this and bear this. So it's an important idea, is to bear it and stand it and develop the strength of character. And develop a sense of perspective. How important is this for me to fulfill my mission in life? I'm going to get angry now. But is that important for me to fulfill my mission in life by getting angry? Am I fulfilling my mission in life by getting angry? Am I fulfilling my mission in life by getting frustrated? No. It's nothing to do with the mission in life. You're here to fix yourself. So this may be a help for me to fix myself. This may be what I need to fix myself. And that's what unfortunately, that's what happens. And so we ask God, why did this happen? Hashem says, I think you need this to fix yourself. Need it. I don't want it. You may not want it, but you may need it. So not everything that happens to us is because we want it. We definitely don't want it, some things. But sometimes Hashem says, this is what you need right now. I was talking about earlier this, the two different names of God. Right? On one side, the name of God, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, right? But we don't say it. We're not allowed to say Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. We can't say God's name the way it's written. Why not? Because God says in the Torah, it says, Zeh Shemi Le'olam, V'zeh Zichri Le'dor-Dor. This is my name, Le'olam. Le'olam is missing a Vav. Rabbi said, Le'alem, to hide. This is my name to be hidden. But this is the name you use. So we use one name, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, Adona. I'm not saying it. And Yud Kei Vav Kei, we don't say. There's two names. What's the difference between the two names? Why can't we say? Why does God have a name we can't say? Doesn't make sense, right? The J witnesses, they say it. I'm not going to say it. But it's not really a J either. They're wrong. Thank God they're wrong. Thank God they don't know. Thank God. Don't tell them. Thank God they're wrong. Don't tell them. Okay, so we don't say it. Only the Kohen Gadol could say it. When he's blessing the Kohanim in the Beit HaMikdash, when they bless the people in the Birkat Kohanim, they would say the actual name of God. They won't. But later on, it says when people got corrupted and tried to copy them, they stopped saying it. Only the Kohen Gadol, and he was drowned out. or everyone, all the other Kohanim would say loudly, and he would say it softly, so no one could hear the real name of God. We don't know how to say it.
Rabbi,
yes.
I know how to say something in English.
Oh, don't say.
No.
Oh, good.
You'll say it in Hebrew. As long as the candle burns, we can fix.
Oh yeah, that's something else. That's not in the Torah. That's a saying. I think Rabbi Shaul Salanta. Rabbi Shaul Salanta says that. As long as the candle burns, yeah. He went to a town one day, and everything was dark, and he didn't know where he was going to stay. He didn't know where he was going to stay, and he found there was a light on, and it was a cobbler. He knocks on the door. He says, "I need a place to stay for the night." He says, "Sure, please come in." He says, "But tell me," he says, "why? How come you're still working?" He says, "As long as the candle is still lit, there's still time to fix." So he says, "Oh, that's Musar. As long as the candle is lit, which means as long as the person's alive, still has time to fix their soul. It's never too late. Even on a person's deathbed, they can always do teshuva." The Rambam says, even on the deathbed, they can do teshuva. Even on the deathbed. So it's never too late. As long as there's life, there's hope. That's another way of saying it, right? As long as there's life, there's hope. We have hope, life, things will get better. Listen, look at people who survived the Holocaust. You have to really admire them. They're alive, they got married, they had children, and now look at they have grandchildren, great-grandchildren. I know a guy here, and we have in shul. We're so lucky, we have a guy in the shul. Holocaust survived, 14 years old, he's in Auschwitz. That's his bar mitzvah present. Right. And 6 years, I can't even talk about it, but today he has a grandchild who's a rabbi.
Baruch Hashem. He has great-grandchildren.
And great-grandchildren, all Shomrei Torah. It's such beautiful to see. But can you imagine you've given up hope? Never gave up hope. Baruch Hashem. Thank God. He married the right wife. Baruch Hashem. So that's very important.
Put it on the line.
She really kept him going. She kept him.
Did she go through the camps?
No, thank God, no. So how important...
It wasn't a work camp.
How important was this for me to fulfill my life's mission? So a person's got to know, I'm going to go off at a tangent over here. If I get upset and I get frustrated and I get this, I'm going off a tangent. My life mission, where's my life mission? You know what? The troubles in life should increase a person's emunah and bitachon. It really does. You pray more, you pray harder. You need something, you pray even better. We all need something. The person's going to use that need to develop a bigger relationship with God. Because why did God give us a need? The fact that God gave us a need means He wants to hear from us more often. That's really the answer. The answer is He wants to hear from us. We have to give more. We have to create that bond. And it's like a child. When the child needs more, they come to the parent more often. The child doesn't need it. It happens to me all the time. And the kid needs something, because all of a sudden you get a call. Daddy, I miss you. Yeah, I know you miss me, right? Yeah. What do you need now? What do you need? So then says, I need something. Oh, okay, now I know. Okay, good. That makes sense. Okay.
And it's so hard to change your basic nature.
It's hard. It's very hard, but that's our mission in life. Our mission in life is to change for the better. Not change for the worse, change for the better. And that's our mission. So a person's got to know, these are tests. We all have tests in life. And it's very easy to talk, but it's very hard when you're sitting in the test to pass that test.
And who gives us the test?
Yeah, everything that happens. Usually it's people. People are God's messengers. We don't really realize. They're angels. They looked at people. The angels came down as people, right? What is that? What is that telling us? The people are the mission. The mission comes from people, and today we don't know these people. In other words, the test is from God, but through other people. People come to you. They say, "Can you help me with this? Can you help me with this? Can you do this? Can you do that? Leave me alone already. I'm sick of people coming to bother me." All right, that's usually a person's depends.
He doesn't give you the good qualities.
He gives you the qualities, but he gives the qualities which are there for you to work on and develop and increase and expand.
Develop them.
That's right, exactly. That's the mission in our life. That's the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon says, our mission in life is to fix our character traits. Amazing. That's a very hard. That's one of the hardest things to do. Fix the character traits, because we have to approach it scientifically. How many people make a list of the character traits? We had this class before. But you have to go through the character traits and see, this is where I stand in this character trait. And the Rambam talks about it also in Hilchot Deot. It's the only halakhic work with a section called The Laws of Character Traits. The Laws of Character Traits. The Rambam has got a law. You can download it today for free. Go to the internet. Look over there. Rambam's Laws of Character Traits. Deot. Hilchot Deot. You get it out.
So why is this class not open to the husbands? You're basically preaching to 50
people. I know who the boss is. I speak to the boss. I want to speak to the boss. You know the joke of the lion. The lion had a wedding, right? And he invited all the animals to the wedding. And a mouse comes, and a mouse says, "Mazel tov, dear lion. My brother, he has a check for you." And the lion got very upset. "You're my brother? Call me your brother? You're a mouse." What do you think? He said, "Before I got married, I was also a lion."
Never. His wife should only know you.
So, you know who the boss is, right? I speak to the boss. Okay. So a person's got to ask themselves before they get frustrated and angry, and is this important for me to fulfill my life's mission? Is this what I'm here for? Is this what God put me into this world to get frustrated and angry and upset? The clearer you are about this and which values are important to you, the easier would it be for you to accept and cope well with trivial and minor aspects of life. It's so hard. But it makes it easy, right? Because we focus on this, it's very important. The person says, you know what, I can't take this anymore. I really can't take this anymore. And then you think about, well, what is my purpose in life? What is my purpose in life? If my purpose in life is to become a better person, then this is not really a major obstacle. So then a person's got to change themselves.
Rabbi,
yes,
I have a question.
Please.
Where is it written? It's still bothering me. 137 years, he didn't tell his children anything. Is that true?
It's Rashi. Rashi brings it down.
Rashi.
In Parshat Vayechi. In Parshat Vayechi, Rashi's quoting a Midrash. Because it said,
right,
because
okay.
Well, the Torah says when he died, before he died, he blessed all his children. But some of the children get blessings. They got rebukes. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, the first three got rebukes. And so Rashi asked the question. He's just asking on the Torah. He's trying to explain. Why did Yaakov wait? We don't find he rebuked them till then. And then Rashi brings down that Midrash that because he was scared Reuven is going to go and join Esav. He didn't talk to him. So it's interesting. But the Torah itself says he rebuked Reuven. It doesn't say he rebuked him before that. It just says right now. So let's go to the... He gives an example in the book on page 51 of a person who is really exact and wanted everything his way. When I was a child, I demanded my food should be prepared just right for me. It's very hard, you know, imagine. Some mothers really spoil their kids. What would you like for dinner? I was, Is it okay? So you spoil the kid. You just spoil the kid. You know, Rav Dessler says, in those days, yeshiva boys, there was no dormitories. There was no, you stayed with someone. And wherever you have your meals, whoever would offer you a meal, you'd just go, and there was like a rota system for meals. You'd go to this one for lunch, you'd go to this one for dinner, da, da, da. And his luck was he went to a certain woman for lunch every day. He said she served him the same meal every day for lunch, but after he finished, he said he could eat anything. So he was grateful to her. Everything tasted good after that. But what happens if you get what you feel like every day, then nothing tastes good. If you don't get what you want, nothing tastes good anymore. That's our trouble. So he says, when I was a child, the man of my food just be prepared just for me. Right. It was the same with everything in my life. My clothing, my room, the weather, how people speak to me, and the list went on and on. My mother could not tolerate the temper tantrums I often threw in order to get her to do whatever I demanded. I've seen this. This happens. This is America. This is the American dream where the children throw tantrums because they don't get what they want. And then the parents give in because they can't take the tantrum. Wrong. Take the tantrum when they're young, and they won't have tantrums when they're old. Because when tantrums get older, it's even worse. Got to break that habit. And they're testing every time the children test. You tell them, no, goodbye. No. Thank God for good children. And that's the advantage of having a lot of children. Why? Because when there's a lot, they know they can't get. They know. There's not enough in the pot. This one, you're trying to be really alone. It's not enough. But you have a few kids, one or two, and they go mad. Because they see that the parents want to give, the parents love. And they want to, some kids are really manipulative. I'm not talking about all kids. But this is just a very, very, very harsh example over here. I often threw tantrums in order to get my mother to do whatever I demanded. My mother's giving in to me trained me to make a fuss about whatever I did not like. I manipulated people with my out-of-control behaviors. But deep down I knew I could control others to meet my needs. When it was time for me to get married, I wanted to marry someone who would go out of his way to make me happy. All potential candidates were tested to see if they were devoted to make me happy. Everyone I met failed my test. They felt my demands were unreasonable and unacceptable. Finally, I met someone I wanted to marry. We were engaged, and I appreciated how flexible he was. I would tell him what I wanted, and he would do whatever I asked. Several weeks before the wedding, he cancelled our engagement. You have such arbitrary rules for making yourself happy. You demand I walk on eggshells. Maybe you can find someone who will keep bending to make you happy. But it won't be me. I'm glad I realized early enough I can't take it anymore. I was shocked and stunned. I felt furious at him for doing this to me. Then I realized I did it to myself. This is really, I don't think it's a true story, but hopefully not. I really hope not. But it just shows how the extremes work. I realized I needed to be much more flexible. To change my patterns, I tested my own limits of tolerance. I engaged in a strict schedule of depriving myself of things I used to think I could not do without. I cut down drastically on what I ate. For 3 whole months, I roughed it, living as ascetically as possible. After 3 months, I started living normally. My going to the extreme showed that I could live happily with much less than I ever thought. Now I'm ready for marriage and life. That's an extreme example.
Say whether she got married or
I don't think it's a true story. I hope not. I really hope not. But it could be. It could be. Unfortunately, today it's happening. And it's fortunate. 100%. Yes. It's also, it depends how you raise your children. We have to, we're the parents. We have to raise our children, and we have to tell our children how to raise their children as well. Sometimes, you know, you go see a grandchild, and you want to smack the grandchild, but you got to hold off. Don't smack the grandchild. Okay. So that's it. So that's the answer. That's one chapter we just did. Let's recap a little bit. And the answer is, we have to raise in our minds what's okay. If we say to ourselves, it's not okay, it's not okay, it's not okay, we're going to be miserable, we're going to be frustrated, we're going to be angry, and we're going to lose our joy in life. It's not okay, it's not okay, this is not okay, it's not okay. You see, people today, amazing. They're walking around with a crutch, they're walking around with this. What happened? And they're smiling. How can it be? And the answer is, we've got to adjust to life. Take it, what God gives, with a pinch, and move on and be happy and say, listen, it could be always worse. It could always be worse. Thank God I'm still alive. Thank God I'm still alive. Baruch Hashem. You see these people. Look at Stephen Hawking. Lahabdil. I'm not a big fan of his. But look at him. I mean, he's a paraplegic. He's one of the top astrophysicists, right? Cosmologists, astrophysicists. He's in a wheelchair. He's in diapers, for goodness sake. But he can blink his eye, and through the eye, he's talking to the world, and he's giving them these theories and some crazy lunatic theories, but some of them are, you know, he's a genius.
Go as far as Stephen Hawking. Look at Karen. Have you ever seen her not smiling? Her
smile is Karen. Beautiful. Okay. Yeah, I don't want to bring any examples, but I'm just saying, it's like, what can a person achieve even in a wheelchair? Because the guy's achieving. He's writing books. He's one of the top people in the world. I mean, it's amazing what a person could do. So it just shows, don't give up. You didn't give up. You could have just given up and said, look, I'm worthless, I'm useless. But he's giving lectures in Cambridge University with a voice box. Oh, it's hard to understand him. But here he is, top guy. It's amazing. So that's how. How did he do that? And the answer is he raised his level. What's tolerable? What is tolerable for me? How can I manage? As long as I'm alive and I can move my voice box or my eyelids, I can still communicate the world. There's a joke, it's a horrible joke. Don't tell anyone this joke. It's a terrible joke.
Were you leading us with
something? I don't tell anyone.
Okay, it's horrible. It's a horrible joke. It's a rabbi joke. Okay. So joke is like this. Okay. It's not a true story. Please, don't take this literally. The rabbi goes, there's a person in the hospital in the ICU. He goes and he stands over there. And he stands next to the person and he's saying, how are you? How are you? He sees all of a sudden the guy's going crazy, he's like going blue in the face, and he can't talk. Here, piece of paper, write it down, please. He's writing it down, gives it to the rabbi, and he dies. The rabbi puts a piece of paper in his pocket, and he goes to the funeral home. He's giving the eulogy now. He says, by the way, this is the person's last message. He takes out the piece of paper, he says, get off the air pipe! It's just a joke. I'm saying it's a joke, it's a horrible joke. I'm just saying, it's a joke. Sometimes we have to know what we realize. The air pipe is the air that pumping air into his lungs, oxygen. Uh-huh. And the rabbi is standing on the pipe.
Oh, the rabbi.
Now we get it.
You get it? Okay, it's a joke. It's a horrible joke. That's what I said.
You don't finish the story, though.
That's the end of the story. They probably killed him. I don't know what happened to the rabbi. Can you imagine reading that? It's a joke. Rachel, calm down. It's a joke. It was a joke. It never happened. Never will happen. Because they don't put pipes on the floor.
Are you sure this book is called Happiness?
This is not the book. This is my horrible joke. Okay. That's why I don't like to say that joke. Okay. Okay, let's move on to the next chapter to make us happy. Page 53. Make music in your mind. Wow. Wow. What a great idea. You know, I have a son like that. He's playing music in his mind all the time. He's always singing and dancing.
Oh, how nice.
I wish he would stop. But the rabbi of Lublin, Rabbi Meir Shapiro, the Jose of Lublin, he says, when you attend a wedding, take the band with you. I mean, take the band with you. You know, you have to feel like you have a band in your head so you can be happy. And if you can't be happy in a wedding, what's the use of going to the wedding? Your whole mission in the wedding is to cheer people up. So if you go to the wedding and you're miserable and you can't cheer yourself up, how can you go and cheer people up? You have to be able to cheer people up. So he says, take the band with you. Everything we do in life, we should do with joy. It says, even dying. He asked his students to dance and sing around his bed. Isn't it amazing? What a way to go.
Who did
that? The Jose Melublin. Lublin. Mayor Shapiro. Jose Melublin. Wherever you are, wherever you go, you can create a mental symphony orchestra. Today we don't need to, just put your here. It's amazing, you can really take it with you. You can take your phone, you put your headphones, if you walk around the street, the music, in the cars, boom, 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 and they want you to share in their simcha. It's disaster, the bass, oh God, it drives me nuts. And the guy next to you in the car with a high bass, and boom, your whole car is shaking, boom, 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 boom. But he's sharing his joy with the world, that's his joy. I don't know how long he'll be alive to hear before his hearing goes. It's very bad. The hearing in weddings, you got to take earplugs with you. And my hearing is going my left ear.
Clinton does that. He takes
it. It's very dangerous. It's very dangerous. So people got to be careful. But people want to share their joy, so they blast their music all times of night. So wherever you are, wherever you go, you can create a mental symphony orchestra. If you prefer, you can create a lively band playing simple tunes. And if you become more of an expert on this, you can increase the amount of musical instruments you will see and hear in your brain. You can imagine the sounds. I have a son who does it. I don't know how he does it. He's hearing the music all the time. Isn't that amazing? You can have as many drums as you wish in your mind. You can put as many drums as you wish. You can have pianos, violins, harps, guitars, horns. This is beautiful, right? Rambam says, if you feel sad, listen to music. Music has got a very, very uplifting, not heavy metal, not rap. They say rap, the monkeys like rap.
That's not music.
That's the latest research.
In my opinion, that's not music.
Exactly. Not mine either, thank God. So Rambam says, listen to music. So nowadays, we don't worry. We got so many different kinds of sources of music. There's so much we can hear. It's amazing. You can download any music you want today. You have access to anything. However, if it's in your brain, it's even better. If you're playing music in the brain, it's even better. And, you know, Shabbat should come out. Shabbat should come out. The music of Shabbat should come out from the mouth. The house should be full of songs on Shabbat. Shabbat songs. How can you live in a house with no songs? And my daughter is my mashgiach. She's my mashgiach. Here's the books. Come on, start singing. She's the mashgiach. I can't wait till she grows up. All right. That's good. Baruch Hashem, the good children. Thank God. To have good children is really the biggest bracha you can have. Thank God, the biggest bracha you can have. So it's not, but you shouldn't complain. Baruch Hashem, a million times. So when the orchestra or band is in your brain, you can play any song you want anytime you feel like it. Intensify this, it's an amazing gift, right? Can you imagine music, and they can turn the music up, turn the music down in the brain. What a great technique to be happy all the time. Play slow, soft music. Imagine you're walking around, you're really upset, you play the slow, soft music in your brain. So there's nothing you can do. What you can do? Say, listen, everything is in God's hands. That's what I do. I tell myself, everything is in God's hands. What can you do? You're stuck on the parkway. What are you going to do? You're going to be late for school. What can you do? It's all in God's hands. Say a tefillah. And whenever you say a tefillah, the traffic opens. It's amazing. I've tried it. It opens. Just amazing. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. I see miracles. Every day I see miracles. So play soft, slow music. Even people who cannot carry a tune can create their own music. Since only you will hear it, no one else has to listen to your music. You put music in your head. Such a what a gift. You would think music all the time. So they play music in his head to calm themselves down. What a great way to be happy all the time. And I have a son who's happy, just music all the time. Boy. Great. Okay. Let's move on. Should we move on? No, we'll stop here. Because we have a heavy chapter next week. What do you enjoy next week? Do what you enjoy. Be a rabbi. That's